So one of my favorite tournaments to watch every time it's on is the World Cup, and I watch every single match. And that got cultivated because in Sierra Leone, the World Cup is a really, really big deal, I think, in the world in general. But in Sierra Leone at the time, only one person or two people in the neighborhood might be able to have a generator or electricity to play the match. So everyone in the neighborhood would gather outside your house or outside your veranda. And sometimes people would stand in the windows and look through the windows just to see the match. And I remember watching World Cup 94. It was my first World Cup that I could see and remember distinctively every goal. And I was supporting Brazil, and Brazil was playing against Italy. Now, Italy had this player called Roberto Baggio. He had like a little rat tail in the back. This guy was a nemesis. He could score with the best of them. And it comes down to him kicking a goal against Brazil, a penalty shootout, and him kicking against Brazil, and Roberto Baggio missed. Listening to This Immigrant Life with Janima Diaby. So my guest today I met in an acting workshop in New York. This was in 2012. I took an acting workshop with a casting director. We were the only two guys that spoke French, so naturally we got to talking, and I think at the time he told me that he did martial arts and I was supposed to take class with him. And we just never hung out in New York the entire time I was there. And a year later after we met, I saw him doing a play in Bryant Park. And maybe 6 months later, I did a play in D.C. with a friend of his. But New York being New York, we never hung out. And I moved to L.A. and I'm driving down Laurel Canyon one day. And I see him riding his bike up Laurel Canyon. And I pull over and I was like, hey, man, you remember we met in this class in New York? Long story short, we ended up becoming friends, becoming roommates at one certain point, and he's a great guy. So here's my conversation with Nason. Grow up, sir.
So I was born in a very pretty and heavenly country of Switzerland.
Switzerland.
What was the other question?
Where did you grow up? What town?
I grew up there. So Switzerland is divided between the German side, the French side, and the Italian side, and I grew up on the French side.
What's the name of the city?
Lausanne. Actually, I grew up in Puy, which is part of the greater Lausanne. Most of, you know, the cities in Switzerland are pretty small, but Lausanne is one of like the fourth or the fifth biggest cities in Switzerland. And Puy is just this very pretty little city attached to it.
Okay. Is it like countryside? What's it like region-wise?
There was like a big, there was like a decent sized forest, like, you know, 5 minutes walk from where I grew up.
Okay.
But then it's pretty residential. So a lot of like apartments, buildings, apartment buildings, houses. Yeah.
What did your parents do when you were growing up?
So my dad was a civil engineer.
Okay.
And, you know, building train stations, bridges, a bunch of public infrastructures. And my mom was raising us and taking care of us. Yeah.
Okay.
Me and my sister.
So what was early life like in Lausanne for you? Like, what kind of stuff did you get into or do growing up there?
Early life in Lausanne was pretty cool. We grew up in a small apartment. I was in the same room with my sister until the age of like 12, 13. She's three years older, so So she definitely was a very important part of my childhood.
Okay.
And I also had a really I had a bunch of friends, but I had a really close friend who lived right next to our apartment, and he was in a big house with a basketball hoop. Yeah. And we just and he was older than me. I was about the age of my sister, 3 years older, and he was kind of one of my best friends, and it was fun.
Do you remember who your best friend was back then?
Oh yeah, well I do. Yeah, I had a few, and I feel like I always had a couple different of friends, yeah, Alexi was one of them, but I would just kind of hang out with them, and he was more like my neighbor. Mm-hmm. Ludovic was another one.
Ludovic?
Yeah, Ludovic.
Oh, that's a classic name.
We used to call him Ludo.
Yeah.
And then we were bad kids a little bit, and getting dirty and jumping in the bushes and stuff like that. We were in class together, and yeah, that's like the early age, say. You're between like Simon also was another one. Yeah, I had a lot of friends. Yeah,
how did you come to join, because I know you did ROTC, which is more of like military for kids, right?
No, I did not do that.
What was the thing I saw you when you had a uniform on?
A uniform on?
Like a military uniform or something, huh?
Oh, well, when I was 19, I did the military service in Switzerland.
Oh, okay.
Most men in Switzerland are obliged to do it. You can find ways around it to avoid or not do it. But yeah, usually you have to go for about 5 months for like a recruitment period, and then you have to go every year for about 3 weeks, because our army, Switzerland is neutral, but is we have this I can't find out the English word for it, of an army, that a reserve army that is basically happens to defend our neutrality. And so every man in Switzerland, it's their obligation as a Swiss citizen to do that.
What do you think you learned from doing that?
I think definitely like physically and mentally, it was very challenging. So I think like, especially I did it in the winter, and I was just coming back from Thailand, where it was all sunny and warm. It was really cold, so definitely like mentally and physically it was really challenging, some of the exercises and some of the stuff we did. But I think what I gained the most out of it was that I ended up being in, so I was with about 16, like my unit was about 16 guys or something. Yeah. We were a mix between the Swiss French and the Swiss German.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all like in the same, you know, dormitory, sleeping together, and what was great about it is that I ended up like getting to know a guy who was like a farmer, a guy who was going to go to college afterwards, and another one, and you would just be like a whole melting pot that if I hadn't been in the army, I would not have experienced, because you usually end up, you know, staying with the same kind of people, same kind of a social economic background that will, if you're like, your family or parents went to college, then you end up going to college, then your friends are also people that go to college and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that, I think that was really cool. And I also got to experience what it is to be formatted, because as you do that for 5 months, your brain changes, and it's pretty scary how you think differently at the end, you know. You're all shaved, nobody had like any hair like on top of their head, looked like a skinhead, and after the army, actually, I went to college, and I remember going to listen to a class to figure out what I wanted to study, what I wanted to do, and it was really hard for me to follow because I'd just been used to kind of like wait for the orders and then do it, and then you get like in the mindset where you're just kind of like a pack, and you just do things together, and you're kind of in a survival mode that you keep your energy and all that for that, rather than just thinking about art and imagination and what stuff like that. So
structure.
That was also a very interesting experience.
Well, what did you think you wanted to do, or what did you fantasize about doing as a kid before any of this came up?
I always fantasize more about a thing about justice, and so I think part of me fantasized about being like, you know, a lawyer and protecting people who are facing injustice. So I fantasize about traveling and helping out a group of people that are suffering from injustice, suffering from difficulties, like. And so for me, I think there was definitely a desire to travel, desire to have adventures, but to be kind of service. So I really had a hard time, actually, to be honest with you, to kind of picture what I wanted to do or how I would, what I would do. And I still, like, now at my age, I still kind of like wonder sometimes, what am I supposed to do? Am I doing what I should be doing, or whatever, and this and that? But there is definitely for me a lot of dream of like traveling, of being of service, and
Where did martial arts come into the picture?
Martial arts came into the picture. I was very clumsy as a kid, and I had a lot of energy, and I wasn't very talkative. There was a lot of languages around me. My dad is from Iran, and my mom is from Austria, and my sister was really good with it. She spoke German, she spoke Farsi, she spoke French. But for me, it was kind of overwhelming, and I just wanted to be able to speak French well enough to, you know, communicate and be accepted with my peers and all that. So I think I was just generally, I had a lot of energy, and I was just very, I felt good physically and moving and all that, but because of all that energy, I used to kind of like, you know, spill the coffee on my parents' friend, and then people would just be, oh, be careful, Nason is coming to the table, watch your drinks. And then that made me even more clumsy. So there was that, and there was also this fascination with like what some athletes are able to do with their body. And I remember also seeing Bruce Lee and as a kid, and I was like, wow, this is amazing, I would love to do that. And so at the age of 7, I asked my parents if I could do a martial arts, and they didn't want me to do an offensive martial art. I was very interested in kung fu, and they were like, no, this is too violent or too aggressive or whatever. And they say, if you want, you can do judo. And so that's what I started with. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up doing that and competing a little bit more like locally. Mm-hmm. And later on, I ended up doing Jeet Kune Do, which is Bruce Lee way of training, and started training in different martial arts, and started to compete in Muay Thai, and then started to teach. And now I've been teaching Muay Thai for about 18 years.
Do you remember what your earliest memory was then as a kid? Do you have any of that sort?
Not, I don't really remember my very young, one of my earliest memory I have, actually, it's a funny one, is, it's not a very clear memory, but it's my parents taught me. They didn't teach me directly, but they brought me to a swimming instructor in south of France during like the summer. And I think I must have been between 2 and 3 or something like that. And they just learned the way they were teaching you how to swim. It was just to throw you in the water and just figure it out. You know what I'm saying? And that memory was kind of like, it was really scary. And they just threw me in the water.
Was that your dad? Was that your dad doing it?
Was that no, it was the instructor. Okay. It was the instructor who did that. So I kind of remember that feeling of traumatized, actually. But it's okay. I do love the water and I do love to swim. So it didn't stop me from, you know, being in the water and all that. But that
what a way to teach! What a way to teach a kid.
Actually, most of my youngest memories are kind of like sad and traumatizing. I remember also, I used to be really attached to my mom as a kid. And I remember also being around 2 and 3. And we would go skiing and during the winter break. And then my mom would drop me at, how do you call those places for kids to like a kindergarten or whatever, to kind of stay there while she would go skiing.
Yeah.
And I remember looking for her. I don't remember exactly, but she told me that I stayed the whole time by the door waiting for her to come back. and I wouldn't leave the door.
You wouldn't play with any of the kids. Do you remember when you first had your first thought that, hey, I want to move to the U.S. And why?
You know what? I didn't really, I think it just kind of happened. For me, I always wanted to travel, live abroad. And what happened with the U.S., I remember when I came to the U.S. for the first time, and I went to New York, and it was pretty surreal to just be in that city. There's so many movies, and I grew up watching old movies, newer movies. My cousin, who used to live two apartments above, was a big movie lover. And she had so many VHS tape, and I would just spend so many afternoons and weekends watching films with her. And so it was really like, it felt really good to just be there and be like, oh, wow, that looks like such and such movie and this and that. But I first actually, before I moved to the US, my plan was actually to live in Montreal. I wanted to study acting in Montreal, and I applied to some schools there, and it just didn't work out. And so while I was there, I felt like I needed to find a way to continue training, and New York had a bunch of very famous reputable acting schools where like a lot of, you know, actors that I admire have studied. And so I applied to the Stella Adler acting studio, and they allowed me to come and do like a summer intensive. Mm-hmm. And that's when I came to the US, and that's when suddenly I decided, okay, this is where I need to be, and I wanna move and live in the US. So I don't know if I really answer your question, but it was all, it just kind of happened to me. I wasn't like, oh, I want to move to the US. I just came there. I studied there. I loved it. I had been there when I was like 20, 21 to visit. And then when I came back to study, then it was like something that I've always dreamed about, studying acting, having amazing teachers, watching plays in on Broadway and musicals, and just having all this diversity and this energy of New York City was just kind of like, it was like a dream. And so once I was there, I was like, I got to figure out a way to be able to immigrate here. Mm-hmm. And so I auditioned for their conservatory program and I got in, and then luckily my parents were supportive, and my dad was willing to write a letter that he would take care of me during my study, because that was the only way that I could get my immigration to come to the US and as a student. Mm-hmm. And little by little, I was able to become independent and work on the side and make some money and you know, live there.
Do you remember what the most difficult thing then was? If since you loved New York so much, mm-hmm. what was the toughest part about living there that first year that you moved?
That first year that I moved,
or was it mostly positive?
I think it was mostly positive, because everything was so new and so special and so exciting, and I was learning so much in terms of acting, and there wasn't really anything negative. Mm. You know, it's like I suppressed for so many years a dream of like studying acting in Switzerland, like for all my youth. I wanted to do it. And it was just because I was shy of what people would think. I used to really like, you know, copy and do everything my sister was, and it was really annoying for her, when she started studying acting, I wanted to do it, but I could feel that it was something bothering her. And so I decided not to do it, and I focused more on martial arts. And then as I, you know, got to the time of college, then I felt, you know, the pressure to have like a degree and have some like a serious job and do and this and that. Mm. Switzerland is, you know, I didn't really have any friends that were actors or into acting, or older friends who were actors, or I didn't know much about the theater. I just really loved watching movies, but that was it. And so there's not really much of a cinema culture in Switzerland and all that I felt like, you know, I didn't think it was really something possible. And so I just kind of like kept it in the back of my head. And it's only actually when I went to Africa in Uganda that then it started like really growing, that desire of like, you know, why not? Actually, maybe this is what I should do and what I want to do. And they were shooting The Last King of Scotland there. Mm-hmm. And I was doing a humanitarian project with some students. Mm-hmm. And someone, a casting director, stopped me in the street and asked me if I wanted to be an extra in a movie. And I ended up being an extra. Yeah, you barely find, I can see me for like barely a second, like super tiny on the big screen, but nobody would notice me. But it was one of the best day of my life. And I remember coming back to my friends and being like, telling them everything we did with the other extras and how we came up with a bunch of stories and trying to make sense of why we would be walking from point A to point B. And we're just talking gibberish. So gibberish, if people don't know, is just like words that don't make sense. We're like, oh my gosh, why is it? Yeah. And we just, it was just so much fun. It felt like a dream. And so being in New York and suddenly living what I always wanted to do, but I was too shy and too afraid to do it, felt like a rebirth in a way. Mm-hmm. But as I stayed in New York for 4 years, mm-hmm. and at the end of my stay, one thing that bothered me, and that was, it just made me a little desensitized about things. Like, you just, everything is so in your face, you just don't have much space, and you just have, everything is so rough and hard that you start putting on this really tough skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like I had lost a little bit of my, it's probably extreme the way I'm going to phrase it, but a little bit of my humanity, because you're just kind of like, you know, there's poverty, there's this around you all the time, and you just have to, you just end up not even like paying too much attention about it and just keep going. And it's, that's the thing that I was like, yeah.
Like a bubble of sorts, right? In New York, you think you have a bubble around you just to survive?
Yeah, and you, there's so much, and it's that you can't just let your, in the beginning, when you arrive the first few months or whatever, someone stop you in the street, you're like, yeah, let's chat, you know, or if someone's doing something, you'll sit and look at them and this and that. But then little by little, you can't give your attention to everything.
Mm-hmm. There's
so much that you have to kind of like, you have to put, yeah, you have to keep focus on what you have to do, where you got to be, and then maybe you might pay attention to this or that, or, but and so little by little you end up, yeah, like you say, maybe getting into this bubble and just protecting you against against the
overstimulation.
Overstimulation, exactly. Yeah.
What is your favorite state or city in the U.S. that you've visited?
I mean, I think my favorite city is New York. Mm-hmm. I really like the state of California. I think it's a beautiful state. There's just so much natural and nature diversity, and between the mountains, the ocean, the deserts, I just really like the state of California. Yeah.
And what's one thing that you think you find in the U.S. that you might not find in Switzerland? It could be with people, it could be with culture, it could be with food. Well, food, I guess that's commonplace, but what's something that you found in your time here that you're like, oh, this is very unique here, that if I lived in Switzerland, I wouldn't experience this?
Well, I've eaten a lot of burgers. even though burgers became really popular in Switzerland once I left, the little city of Lausanne now have, I don't know how many burger restaurants. No, that's the joke. But my first week in the US, I ate a lot of burgers. I think for me, one thing that the US has, and it's really like night and day between the US and Switzerland. I think that's why for me, it really, that's the first thing that comes to my mind is it's just the energy. Like, there's an energy to the US where everything is kind of possible, where you like, where entrepreneurship is really promoted and encouraged. Mm-hmm. Where in Switzerland, it's the opposite. It's very like you have to stay kind of quiet and be humble and not really overglow, because mm-hmm. you don't want to put too much shade to your neighbor or whatever, and
mm-hmm.
and so that's one thing that I feel like in the US is this kind of like this feeling of like everything is possible, and less where it's obviously like any countries you live in, there's going to be difficulties and ways that you have to follow to get to wherever you want to get, but
mm-hmm.
that kind of like youthful spirit, it's kind of like it's a young country, you feel that it doesn't have the weight of the past, and then sometimes that's a problem, you know, where in mm-hmm. Switzerland there's a lot of, it's a beautiful place, and I've got so many people that I love there, and I really recommend to anybody to visit. But there's definitely like a weight in Switzerland about how like things are supposed to be and how and this and it's just sometimes very conservative.
Traditional, would you say? Well, conservative more so.
Conservative more than traditional.
What's one thing in Switzerland then that you think you would think to yourself, man, every American should experience this outside of America?
Swiss fondue.
Well, we've had some good ones of those. Yes, indeed. I will, you know what? I will vouch by that. It's a lot of cheese, but it's really good.
Man, this is delicious.
And you know, the best part is the cheese at the bottom. At the bottom is bomb. Okay.
La religieuse. We call it la religieuse. Sorry, la religieuse. For all my religious friends listening to it, but yeah, that's how we call it.
The bottom. The cheese at the bottom.
The bottom one. The burnt cheese. I think, but there is something about definitely, I think, you know, Swiss cheese, Swiss chocolate for sure. I think something about Swiss and something that, I think that's it. I think that's it. That's what I would say about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you, when you moved here, did you ever think about, did you have any pressure to maybe change your accent? Is that played any part of you? Is there any part of you that thinks, oh man, I wish I sounded more American? Is that a thing?
Oh yeah. It's been a big thing for me. Yeah. It's been a very weird, journey from like not caring about it, over caring about it, to the point where I almost would be so so aware and worried and that overthinking it that I wouldn't want to even communicate or talk to people because, and then somehow when you're thinking about it and how it should sound, then it sounds off, and then you start making weird sounds or whatever. But I think for me as an actor, I always felt like, especially, coming to the US to act, I felt like I needed to improve my accent, to improve my chances to work. But now I feel like as, you know, I've been here for about over 11 years, my accent has evolved and changed and it's kind of a blend. And now when I end up going for roles where, you know, I have to be a French character. I have to, you know, exaggerate the way I speak because my French accent is not strong enough.
Worry not for acting, though. Worry not for acting. Do you think you would care?
For sure. I think for me, like, there is this feeling that sometimes, even though I would always get a lot of the time get like people saying me, oh, I like your accent, or I like how you speak and this and that. I would just often when people would say, where are you from? And I would get annoyed because I'd be like, oh, it's because of my accent.
That's oh, no.
You know, or I'd be like, oh, I would feel like if I'm not saying things correctly or well, then it would be harder for people to follow me. And I would feel like, you know, oh, everybody has such a quick attention span that I need to be better with, you know, with how I say things and my grammar or my accent and this and that. But I think it depends on the personalities of people. But I feel now, you know, as I'm older, I care much less, and I own who I am more, and I'm just kind of like, if someone wants to hear what I have to say, good. If they don't, then that's their problem or whatever. So I don't, in my real life, I don't really, my accent doesn't bother me at all now, but in the past it had.
It did. Okay, so last question I'm gonna ask you is, if you could have dinner with any two people, dead or alive, or celebrity, a person in real life, family, who would they be?
Okay, So I have thought about that question because I listened to your episode yesterday.
Okay.
So I just want to say, and I think I'll do a mix of kind of more spiritual and one more simple. Maybe both can be very spiritual, but who knows? The first person I think I would have dinner with is Abdu'l-Bahá.
Abdu'l-Bahá.
Abdu'l-Bahá, yeah. Abdu'l-Bahá is the son of Baha'u'lláh, and Baha'u'lláh is the prophet in the Baha'i faith. It's the religion I grew up with and the religion that I chose. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of grown up and kept like a picture of him. And he's the only, like, one of the few really important people in the Baha'i faith that you have a picture of in black and white. So he, and you know, the Baha'i faith is an early religion that happened in, that started in Iran mid 19th century and now it has grown and spread all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about, I think there's something about his picture that I have, that I've been carrying and traveling with. There is just a kindness. There's something about him, and also about his, he wrote also a lot of writings and about the religion and prayers. And he just seemed to be, and my great grandfather in Iran actually met him.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something about him that I would love to have a dinner with and meet him and just be in his presence. The other person is a different kind of reason is Monica Bellucci, and it could actually still happen because she's alive.
Mary Magdalene, wasn't she? Was she Mary Magdalene from?
She was. I think she was. Or something. It was just as a kid, I had a few pictures on my wall, of like actresses that I fantasize about. One of them was Monica Bellucci. The other one was actually Cameron Diaz from The Mask.
Yes.
But still until now, Monica Bellucci is, I think she's such a beautiful woman and she has such a presence and an elegance to her that I just would love to have dinner with. And I asked my wife also, Crystal, that, if I had a chance, she would let me have she would allow me.
That's gonna be interesting conversation between her and Abdul as well. Don't forget that Abdul is
it would be everybody together. Yeah, Abdul. Yeah, that'd be a very interesting dinner, the three of us. Yeah, I wasn't thinking actually that everybody would be together.
Solid choice, man. I didn't see that one coming, my brother. I lied. I'll ask you one more. Do you remember when we met?
Yeah, I do remember. I don't remember exactly how it was. We went, we did a class together, a casting director's class in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You were in the class, but I remember after we left the class, we started talking to each other as we were getting into the elevator. And I just really felt like it felt very natural, like we knew each other, you know?
My brother. I can't thank you enough for this, man. You know, I appreciate you for this, bro.
Thank
you for this, my brother.
Always a pleasure to be in presence of your smile, of your energy.
Merci, Baba. Merci, Baba.
And that was my conversation with my good friend, my brother, Nason from Lausanne, Switzerland. Until next time, until the next guest. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, write a review, give a 5-star rating, and I'll have someone up for you next. Au revoir.
Thank you.